Yeah, the woman has rhythm, right? Yeah, thank you so much, Gia and band. Chris Kimbler and the Cats, yay. Thank you. Let's see. So I was away last week, as you might have known if you were here. If you weren't, you're going to hell. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. Totally kidding. No, I was up at a Buddhist convention. I was working for the Buddhists last week, and as some of you may recall, before I left, I referred to them as the pesky Buddhists because they were getting on my nerves. But they were actually just scaring me, but I'll talk more about later. They were anything but pesky. They were wonderful Buddhists, and I loved them, and I had a great time. But part of the reason I had such a good time was that I knew that the center was in good hands with our beloved Reverend Judy Pando, who spoke and did an amazing job. Did an amazing, amazing job, I heard. So it's just wonderful to have this beautiful community to come back to, and I'm delighted to be here. So today, in honor of Independence Day, in honor of earthquakes, in honor of holding paws for shaking dogs and putting on thunder shirts and wrapping them in heavy blankets because of the fireworks, I'm speaking about freedom. Ernest Holmes had this quote where he said, in various ways, he said this a lot. He said, "We are bound because we are first free." In another quote, he actually says that we are bound hands and wrists together, and the source of our bondage is our freedom. And you might wonder what that means, but what it means is that we have free will, and that we sometimes use our free will against ourselves. Or that we sometimes use free will in a way that is unconscious and habitual, that doesn't create the greatest outcome that we would like. In this spiritual center, we believe that our thoughts create our experience of reality. And so we are very careful about minding our thoughts, minding the mind and minding the heart, to ensure that we create a beautiful reality, not only for ourselves, but for all beings everywhere. We try our best to serve and support all beings everywhere through this teaching. So I'm talking this morning about using our freedom. The talk title is something like, "What is freedom for what? Freedom for what? Huh? Freedom for what?" Are we using freedom for something that is ultimately not going to feel very good for us and something that doesn't bless all beings? Or are we using our freedom of thought to create beautiful, sweet, meaningful lives? You all deserve a great life. We all deserve a great life. And it's our job here to support one another in finding that great life within ourselves and inwardly and outwardly, and then sharing it with others. So I was thinking a little bit about free will. I read a lot of and watch a lot of YouTubes from non-dual teachers, and some of the folks these days are saying that we don't actually choose our negative thoughts, that our thoughts come unbidden. And like if you think of a negative pattern that you have, or a negative thought that you tend to have, can you find the choice maker? Can you find the place within you that actually chooses it? And you may not. It may be floating in this sea of thoughts that here in this teaching we called human race consciousness. The human race has this sea of thoughts, and they just kind of assimilate into us. It's a bit like, I was thinking that it's a bit like when somebody has an accent. I was with my Canadian in-laws a couple of months ago. It was my husband's 80th birthday. And I just added your age, sorry about that. Everybody knows, okay. I was with my Canadian in-laws, and I was saying to them, "You know, I just love your cute little accents." And they looked at me and they said, "We don't have accents." "What are you talking about?" Actually, they said, "What are you talking about, eh?" One of Hugh's relatives, John, told me the reason why Canadians say "a" so much. Does anybody know that reason? You guys can help me deliver the punchline of this joke, okay? Everybody say "a"?
"A."
Good job. Okay. The reason, and when I point to you, you say "a." Do it again.
"A."
Good. Okay. The reason Canadians always say "a" is because of the spelling of the country. C.
A.
N.
A.
D.
A.
There you have it. the reason for A. Thank you so much for playing with me. I like that. I like that. So, you know, it's a bit like having an accent. It's not something that we pick up deliberately. It's just we're around people that speak that way, and it just kind of infiltrates us, and we start speaking that way. The thing is that those Canadians, those pesky Canadians, didn't even think they had an accent, did they? And when I lived in the South, those people didn't think they had an accent. And sometimes people will tell me I have a slight New York accent, and I'm like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? This is the way we talk. It's the same thing with the stories that we tell ourselves. The same thing with the stories that we tell ourselves. They infiltrate us through race consciousness, through human race consciousness, through the people we're around, and we start repeating them over and over and over again out of habit. And then we think that those stories are the truth. That is using our freedom to repeat a story over and over again. And if it's a story that doesn't quite serve us or all beings, then we're using our freedom against us. And we are constantly making stories and drawing pictures about everything. If you want to really know what this looks like, Here's what you need to do. Get yourself a church. Get a microphone. And say an occasional provocative thing on stage. I can't imagine who I'm talking about. It was Reverend Judy, right? Reverend Judy last week? Yeah. So some of you may remember a couple of weeks ago I was talking about some of the menagerie at our house, and I did mention that we have some unbidden animals. That would be a few rats coming in and eating the fruit off the kitchen table and climbing up on top of the refrigerator to get the bananas that we keep up there. And in the midst of that story, I said that I trapped the rat in a humane trap, and then I brought it away from my house to let it go, and I brought it to Ojai. Okay, so I want all of you to close your eyes for a minute, and I'll play some New Age music. Close your eyes and picture me taking the rat to Ojai. What do you see? What am I wearing? Where am I actually leaving the rat? What am I saying to the rat as I let it go? Okay, that's it. You can open your eyes now. There were people, I think, that thought I really did release the rat in somebody's home. Like maybe I put it in the trap and I packed a little suitcase for it and got a souvenir from my house, some dog hair probably, and put it in the car and put a little seatbelt on it and then drove up to somebody's house. Anybody here live in Ojai? Oh, Carol. So I knock on Carol's door and I say, Carol, I have this pet for you. His name is Ben. He likes fruit. Take good care of him. You just mind your own business. I'm going to let him go in your kitchen, okay? Don't mind me. It wasn't like that at all. You know, I'm not going to tell you what happened, what I did, but rest assured it was respectful of everybody who lives in Ojai. And really what I did was between me and Ben, the rat. But I'm not telling you so you can continue to develop the pictures. Develop the pictures and see, is this real or is this something that I'm telling myself is real? And that's what we're doing all the time. We are developing pictures and telling ourselves that it is real. If we can take that extra step and say, maybe this isn't as real as I am making it, then we can let go of some of our white-knuckled grip on reality. And when we let go of our perspective of reality, when we let go of our perception of reality, then it makes room for a greater reality to come in. You know, as we're telling these stories about what is real for us, it's not that it's unreal, it's just only a fragment of the truth. But when we tell ourselves these stories, we often do it in a way that is about predicting unfortunate consequences for ourselves, worrying. Anybody here create any disaster fantasies in their mind about, oh, Susan Burrell, okay. And she's a minister, wow, awesome. I know. Yeah, let's just shatter the illusion, right, for all of us. Yeah, so, you know, we often are predicting the worst case scenario. And certainly when I was referring to the Buddhists as pesky, this is like super embarrassing that I referred to the whole group of people as pesky. The Buddhists that I worked with up in Northern California last weekend when I was saying that they were pesky Buddhists, that was because I was creating a scenario in my head of my own failure. And I felt like the Buddhists were making me feel like I could possibly be a failure because they were asking certain things from me that I wasn't entirely sure about. I wasn't sure if I could deliver. They wanted me to memorize the monologues that I had to say before the introductions, and I couldn't even pronounce some of their names, and they wanted me to, you know, memorize these monologues, and they were hiring me for an interfaith flavor, and they wanted somebody who could be entertaining or funny or what have you, and it just didn't feel like I was going to be able to pull that off. And so I called them pesky Buddhists. and then I got aware of that, using my free will to get aware of what I was doing in my mind. It's like, it's not that they're wrong, it's that I am taking this into myself and creating a reality that is unfortunate. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. I remember one of the first times that I actually noticed that really clearly was when my husband and I were in Sedona, and we were doing the Sedona method. And I was anticipating this conversation that I was just dreading. And we did the Sedona process with each other, where you let go of stuff. And I told him the story of this conversation that I was dreading. And he said to me, you don't know what's going to happen. You have no idea what's going to happen. But she's this. No, you don't really know what's going to happen. I hate it when he's right, you know? I just hate that. Because it turned out that I didn't know what was going to happen, and the conversation never happened, and everything was fine. And I was doing the same thing with the Buddhists, thinking that I was going to underperform, I was going to fail to deliver, and that I was going to be a disappointment, and I was going to feel bad about myself, and all of that stuff. But seeing it is half the battle. So if there's some place in your life where you're not feeling good about life, is it possible that you are creating some type of a future scenario that isn't very pleasant? And is it possible to let go of some of that? I was able to let go of some of that disaster scenario or unpleasant scenario by prayer. I did the Ho'oponopono prayer about 1,000 times. That's a forgiveness prayer. And I did just whatever I was led to, lots of meditations, lots of praying, and lots of encouragement from practitioners and people that I was around that helped me to just be open to greater possibilities. And what it came down to was that it wasn't about showing up and doing a good job for them. It was simply about showing up and being of service. And once I found that mindset, once I found that attitude, everything changed. Because, believe it or not, the conference was completely different than what I had imagined. They had a completely different set of needs for me than what I had imagined. I had to work on the fly quite a bit, so there was no way I could have memorized what I was supposed to say, and so I just went with it. And this is the part that just touches me and inspires me, is that so much of my purpose in being there, was not about being on stage and being in the spotlight and being in the center. It was the quiet activity backstage, the quiet practice of the better, which is what the Franciscans say, the quiet practice of being a presence of peace for those who were backstage, and quite honestly, occasionally freaking out a little bit. You know, they were Buddhist monks, and a lot of them were just heavily engaged in the Buddhist teaching, and a lot of them were extremely calm. But, you know, you put a Buddhist monk or anybody in a big theater, and there's been no rehearsal, and they need to get from here to there, people get a little tense. And the other thing about Buddhist monks is that sometimes they go missing. Like, we lost another monk. What does he look like? Well, he's got a shaved head, and he's wearing a brown robe. You look out, there's like 100 people with shaved heads and brown robes. And then I'm singing in my head, you know, I didn't actually do this out loud, which I'm kind of proud of, but I'm going to do it now. I'm going, what became of the monk, the monk, the monk, the monk, the monk? You know that song, right? Yeah. So much for not saying that out loud, right? Yeah. But just being, to be a place of peace in all of that and to assist getting the monks from here to there was such a bigger part of my job than just going out and saying a few words about who was going to be speaking. It was a beautiful thing, and I hope to carry that consciousness into other things that I do. That maybe it's not really what I think it's about. Maybe it's about something completely different. And anything that you might be stressing about, anything that you might be creating a future unpleasant scenario about, maybe it's not about your job performance or your looking good or whatever it is you think you want from it. Maybe it's about showing up in complete surrender and in complete service and allowing something, a greater vision of reality, to work through you in ways that you couldn't have imagined with your smaller self. Does that sound like a plan? I love that plan. You guys all have to help me remember that plan because I forget it frequently. We'll help each other, okay? In community, that's what community's for. We lift each other up into the greater yet to be, into the quiet practice of the better. So we've talked about how we use our minds to sometimes create unpleasant scenarios, how we use our minds to cling on to a reality that we think is true, but really maybe there's a bigger picture behind it. How do we turn that into action? Some of it I've said already through spiritual practice, and some of it I think is just by being still and being aware and putting one foot in front of the other to do the right thing, the next best thing. And the other thing I think is through the consistent release of judgment. Looking at our judgment. We often use our free will to judge what's happening, to blame life for what's happening, to blame others for what's happening. That's what I was doing with the Buddhists, right? The quote-unquote pesky Buddhists who were the opposite of pesky, whatever that is. Anybody know the opposite of pesky?
Perky.
The perky Buddhists, yes. Okay, pesky and perky, I like that. Okay, so that's what I was using my free will against myself and against others. What if we could look at that, see that, and then do the work of just letting that go and seeing where that leads us in life, how to be with others from that place of letting go of the labels in that bigger picture, being in that bigger picture. Probably the best thing that happened for many of us in this conference that we did didn't start out very well. So we had completed the first day of the conference. It was 2 days, and I had just completed hours of being in this theater, introducing monks and trying to find monks and wrangling monks and all of that. And I came out, and there was also a festival of tents in this big square. There were several venues going on at the same time, but there was this festival of tents. And on the edge of the festival of tents, there were some singers, some young people, probably in their early 20s. It was at Cal Berkeley, so they were probably Berkeley students. And they were playing a guitar, and they were singing, and it was really beautiful. And I was like, wow, that sounds awesome. That sounds really pretty. And I stopped to listen, and I noticed that some of the words were, Jesus is your Savior, Jesus is your Savior. You know, it was all like about come to Jesus and Jesus is Lord and all of this stuff like that. And I was raised Christian and I somewhat identify with being Christian, but I don't believe that Christianity, that Jesus is the only way to grace or heaven or salvation or what have you. So I don't know whether that makes me Christian or not. But my response to these singing Christians, these beautiful young people that were singing, was to be somewhat offended by their singing. Thinking, who do you think you are sitting at the edge of a Buddhist conference? Are you trying to convert these heathens? Or you know, do you see them as heathens? Are you trying to convert them? I'm wearing a Buddhist and a cross today, too, by the way. Buddha and a cross today. Are you trying to convert them? It's like the word that kept coming to my mind was obnoxious. That's an obnoxious thing to do. And a lot of the people, because I had to tell a bunch of people about it, a lot of the people that I told had the same type of reaction. And then we were sitting there listening, and the facilitator of the concert, Diana, came up, and I saw her walk over to the Christian singers, and she said something to them, and she came back, and I was all like, oh, I hope she kicked Christian, you know, booty. And so bad. And she came over and she said, you know, I talked to them and you know what, I think maybe I should have asked them to join us, to stand in the middle of the square and sing. And everybody standing around's heart melted. What a beautiful response to the Christian singers, to invite them to come into the center and sing. To welcome that which might possibly be against you or trying to change you, just to welcome it and say, we are spacious enough to hold you. And everybody standing in this little group that was chatting said, oh, Diana, please do that, please do it. And she did. And the Christian singers did come into the center of the square. I wanted to sing with them then at that point, but then I I was doing other stuff, you know, instant friends. And nothing happened. Nothing unfortunate happened. But that, to me, was one of the hallmark experiences of this time away because it's such a great demonstration of what we teach here. This sort of paradoxical grace, this counterintuitive grace. You know, somebody's coming around trying to change you, trying to make you believe something that maybe you don't want to believe. You have perfect right to believe what you believe, and somebody comes and tries to change that, and you want to push them away. But Diana and the people in that conference were big enough to invite them in, to embrace them. And we have no agenda to change the singers. It's just a matter of embracing them and calling them in. And we don't know what type of ripple or what type of good effect that might have caused. But I know it was something good because it was initiated from a place of togetherness versus separation. It was initiated from a place of wholeness versus saying brokenness. It was initiated from a place of love versus disdain. And so that's another way that we can use our free will for good. We can use the free will that has been so graciously given to us by this creator of the entire universe that made so many things, so many beautiful things, and gave us this beautiful power to look at what we're thinking and then make a slightly different change, to be that presence that it said in the reading that's looking out from the spacesuit, that's looking out from the eyes of spirit, from the eyes of love, and saying, what is the most loving choice I can make in this manner? What is the most loving thing I can do? What is a little out of my comfort zone? What is a little bit paradoxical? Spirit, guide me. Show me what the most loving thing I can do is. Does anybody have something like that in their life that they can work on? Something where you're struggling, where you feel angst, where you feel against somebody, and perhaps it's there for your opportunity to say, Spirit, what is the most loving thing I can do in this circumstance? It may be moving away from them. It may be setting a boundary. But it also may be inviting them in. And I think that's the one that we consider the least, is holding them. Holding them like you hold a dog when it's shivering from the firecrackers, you wrap a thunder shirt around it. Just holding them with that grace and that goodness and that care and that love. And so, for all of us today, what I know for all of us is that we are already held in that grace. That everything that we've talked about already this morning, that we are remembering who we are and that we are the face of God and that we are that gaze of love that's looking out from the spaceship, that we are that innocence and that purity. If it's true for us, it is true for everyone. So let us use our free will wisely and celebrate that. Let's do that now and let us pray.